Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there, everyone. This is Carly from Daytime After Dark. And tonight I'm very excited. We are having one of our guests that's been here before, Sharon Gilbert. Well, Sharon was Gilbert. But, you know what I mean, people. You should know what I mean, people, by now, really. And she's been on The Edge of Night, The Love Boat, One Life to Live. And so I'm going to bring her on. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Carly. So good to talk to you again. And David.
Yes, you too. And you know, the other night I was flipping TV because it was midnight and there was nothing on. And the Love Boat came on and your episode of the live.
No, you're kidding.
Yes. Yes. And I know I never asked you this. Maybe I did, but I do not know if I asked you this. But okay, since you were on the Love Boat, and I was obsessed with the Love Boat growing up because I thought it would be fun to live on a boat, you know, for a little while. I mean, you would miss your TV and everything. But okay, so when you guys were on the Love Boat and you were taping, were you guys actually on the boat?
No, they wouldn't put out that much money. No way. They have stock footage of the boat, and they probably took stock footage of their regular stars on the boat. But ours was, we shot totally in a studio. And it was actually very similar to the our soap operas in that we spent so many hours in our dressing room just waiting for your 5 minutes to go on. It was just a very long, tedious day. But the cast was fantastic, and it was an honor and a blast. And I mean, to be able to have your face in one of those little life preservers forever, you know, it's like such an honor.
Oh my God, I mean, I would play on, I'm like, oh, that's it, Sisso season. And, you know, I still love the Love Boat. I don't know why they haven't rebooted the Love Boat. I think that's cool, but I think the only thing why they haven't is because, number one, I think the captain passed away. So, but they could get a new captain. And,
yeah.
You know, like, new stars of today, because Love Boat brought on a lot of people and gave them, you know, stardom on the Love Boat. I mean, there's so many people I've talked to on here that's all been on, a lot of you guys have been on the Love Boat. So,
and it was
at one time,
Love Boat. So ABC,
you know,
was a Love Boat,
one time
so they were promoting their soap operas, so it was wonderful for them to give us an opportunity. And, you know, it was fun because they had a – we were in New York. The Love Boat shot in Los Angeles. So you'd have a limo come and pick you up. You'd fly first class to L.A. and you'd stay in a fantastic place and – they just treated you really nice. So it was a great, you know, just a lot of fun to get out of New York and be treated really well and then do the show. And then I got residuals on that one show I still get residuals. You just saw it.
Is it like a penny or 25 cents?
Yeah.
Oh, is it more than that?
Right now it's, yeah. Well, look, if you, every time you shoot a show and they show it, you get money, but it's a sliding scale. So for the first year, it's a lot, and then the first 5 years, it starts going down, and then after 20 years, you know, you get like 20 cents an episode. But just think about it.
I talked to was on the Love Boat, and so it's like that. And, you know, it's like 25 cents. Someone said they got a penny. I'm like, wait, they send you a penny and the cost of a stamp is 30
yeah.
cents. So to me, that did not make sense to me. I'm like, okay, why don't you wait until it's up to 40 cents? And then it would make sense to really send it, but...
The whole renewable thing is pretty crazy for sure. But yeah, sometimes I'll get residual checks for like 11 cents. And, you know, I think, should I even cash this? But if you don't, you are kind of screwing up their book. So they want you to cash it, but it's pretty silly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, just having it come in, anytime a check comes in my mailbox, hey, I'm like, thank you, let's keep this flowing. I mean, you know, no matter what it is, it's like, thank you, money from the mail. Yeah, you can't turn that down.
Well, I can help you if there's money in the mail, but I would not be happy if it was like a penny. I mean, come on, $20, people. And also, you know, I keep forgetting that you were on, you know, another word, and I keep forgetting that. And what was funny about another word for Seattle, we lost another word here for 5 years, NBC. For some reason didn't say it in Seattle for 5 years, and everyone was complaining. So of course, when I went down to Oregon to visit my grandparents, then I was cussing up because they had it on there, and it was funny. One state you don't have a soap on, but in another state you do. I just found that really funny in a way, because, you know,
I feel very lucky because I did soaps in the 80s, and I feel like 80s was the top time for soap opera. It's when Love in the Afternoon came in, and Gloria Monty and General Hospital just went through the roof with Ruth and Laura. And a lot of focus was on the soaps in the 80s. It was just a very, very – soaps were great then. They did unusual things. They got really fun. So I feel like I was very lucky because after that, they began to slide, and you're right. That was part of the problem with The Edge of Night, is that certain affiliates would drop you, or it got really crazy in that The Edge of Night would be shown at 6:30 in the morning or 9 in the morning or 4 in the afternoon or sometimes midnight, you know. So it was a kind of the beginning of the end for soaps.
I mean,
once the 90s hit.
No, well, I think the 90s really, I mean, I still think soaps today are great, you know. My favorite is General Hospital, of course. That's my home soap. And, but I still think when you have the OJ trial, that kills soaps for a lot of people because, you know, people were seeing our soaps at 2 o'clock in the morning. And it was okay, and it was a pain in the butt to set your alarm clock to go record it because you didn't have DVRs and TiVos then. And may I add, if you had TiVos and DVRs way back then, I would have been in school a lot more. But since, you know, they didn't done that yet, you know, I didn't trust my VCR to record everything because the tape went out after 8 hours. So I just think the 90s is where the soaps went down, unfortunately. And
yes,
then the trial of the Century Number One, you know, took it, you know, made a crapshoot for the soaps to go down. And then... A month ago, I felt like we were in another trial of the century, number two, with the impeachment, because the new hospital did not air for 2 weeks. I was going crazy. You know, people were Twittering me, DMing me, saying, okay, Carly, do something. Call ABC, do something. And
now,
I'm like,
The Edge of Night they would have afternoon specials, and they would have afternoon news reports. And since we were on at 4 most of the time, we were the ones that got canceled for those. So that's been going on forever.
But my thing, Sharon, is if they did this to the men, basketball, football, I love football. I shouldn't say football, then it would do it to me too. Okay, basketball, I love, but if they did doing a basketball playoff or baseball playoff, I think finally the men would be this is irate. And
well,
women,
I believe
there
was a time when a Super Bowl was stopped at the final play where, you know, it was a crucial play where somebody else overturned the game or something. I don't remember exactly. It put on a Heidi commercial or something. And there was,
my grandfather told me that he was not happy.
No.
And
no.
I just think, you know, they need to put, there's so many cord TVs now. There's so many CNNs. And just give us our soaps. You know, there's only 4 soaps left in America, people. And, you know, I just think, we are just, sometimes we need that break. And we need that hour or 2 hours of what's up you're watching. And
or your stories.
Give it to us. And I think you will really be really good back on daytime. I think if I could pick what soap you should be on, it would be, let's see. Well, since all of them are based in California, you will have to fly. Well, if you live in New York, wait, where do you live?
Well, I'm in California right now, and I'm about 90 minutes from LA.
Okay, perfect. So you could be on all 4 of them, but not the ones. But I will put you on Young and the Restless first, and then
how about
I will put you
on.
Yes, and then I will put you on Days of a Life second, and then I will put you on Zeno Hospital third, and then fourth Boredom Beautiful. The reason why I'm picking Bold and Beautiful last is because it's only half an hour and we don't see our characters, you know, every day, like a normal soap because it's a half an hour. And, you know, I just think that, you know, it's too bad that Bold and Beautiful never got to be an hour because I get involved in 20 minutes of it, and then I'm like, okay, hurry up, hurry up. And then it ends for the day. I'm like, okay, that's not fair. And so to me, I don't like it. And when you're on One Life to Live, and, okay, One Life to Live was on ABC, and Another Word was on NBC, but was Another Word based in L.A. or was it based in New York?
Every show I worked on was based in New York because that's where I lived then. And at that time in the 80s, other than General Hospital being one of the top shows, New York ruled. It had most of the soaps were there. And so Another World was in New York in Brooklyn, and One Life to Live and The Edge of Night shot in Manhattan, which was fantastic because that's where I live.
Yeah.
So
the only
now
out in LA was The Eights and Days and Young and Bold. So I mean, but at one time you had 12 soaps, and if I was a radio host back then, oh, my God, I don't know how I could keep up with all 12 soaps. I mean, I'm keeping up with 4 now. but it's crazy. But we have some callers for you, and
okay.
So I better get them on because you and I could talk forever. And it's dangerous when you and I get on air together. It's very dangerous, but I know you will be back, so it's not like
okay. We
didn't get to talk again. And so I'm bringing on, let's see, 504, you on the air? 504, you on the air?
Sorry, this is Shane in Louisiana. Hey, Sharon.
Shane, my buddy.
Timed it perfect. Oh, I miss you so much. Yes, I'm literally at a conference and went into my car to call in. And I will quick story. I'm at a conference for work and sitting at, and all the guys know I'm coming on the call to call in. And so, and this just shows you about the edge of night. Out of a table of men I'm at, there are two of them didn't. The older guys did know the Edge of Night, and one of them did used to watch it in the early days. So, yeah. So, you know, Edge did have a huge men following, but I'm going to talk quick.
Yeah.
Question for you.
It was on 28 years, so 28 years. Yeah. That's a long run.
But try to think of a new question to ask you. So my question is, and I don't know if you got into this already, you know, you are still best friends with Terry and Deborah, who was a...
Yeah.
Francis Fisher. Yeah. So what stories could you tell us from the days on the Edge that they would not want us to know?
Oh, that's a good question.
Well, the best stories with Terry Davis and Francis Fisher were not on camera, I'll tell you that. We were in our mid-20s, 25 years old. We were in New York City. It was the 70s. Things were really cheap. Manhattan was bankrupt and grungy, but you know, you could get a parlor floor apartment a block from Central Park for $300 a month. And we had so much fun. We had fun on the show, but we became friends, and Francis had a big loft in Soho. And so that's where all the stories would come from, because she was partners with an incredible artist, Jerry, who was also an amazing photographer. And we would all go over there and just cook a chicken or a turkey, or there would be food. And it was in this big artsy loft. And sometimes Jerry would go, "Oh, my God, you look beautiful tonight. Let me take some pictures," and set up a whole thing and take somebody's pictures, or there would be some other art project or something. And of course there was always champagne and caviar parties. That was our big thing, champagne and caviar parties. And it was so creative, and we laughed and had so much fun. And okay, I just remembered one story. So Francis and Terry are over at my apartment, and we had been drinking a lot, because it was a bon voyage party for me. I was about to go on a Mediterranean cruise. And so we drank way too much, and I owed Francis money for something, whether it was the wine or something, I don't know, but I wrote her a check, and then we all crashed. And the next day we looked at the check, and I had written on the check to Fracas Fisher, F-R-A-C-U-S, Fracas Fisher. And we called her, we still call her Fracas. It's the perfect name for her. So that became her nickname, Fracas. You know, I mean, that's, we had so much fun. And over 40 years later, we still get together and do all kinds of stuff. It's a great friendship and relationship on all of us, with all of us. Fracas.
That's awesome. All right, then I need to go, Sharon, but I love you, miss you,
yes.
And I'll let somebody else talk now.
I'm so happy you got through and you took time out of your conference to call in. And, we'll have to get a party going on our Facebook site again, because we had so much fun. For over 3 years, we watched shows together and laughed and laughed and laughed. It was really fun. So thanks for calling in.
No, thank you.
Yeah, call back anytime. I mean, we have a lot of sub guests Also, just always look at the page, and, you know, we always have interviews, so you can talk to your favorite stars on here, so just always call in if you want.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too.
Okay, so now is 9:39. You're on the air.
Hey, it's Paige and Normie.
Hooray!
Hello.
Hi.
Two more.
Hi.
Buddies.
Paige and Normie.
So these
hey.
Are people that
we're just...
that we watched. Norm had taped many of the Edge of Night shows and edited them and put them on YouTube under Mr. Edge 80s. And so for over 3 years, we would run these shows 5 days a week live, and then we'd all just laugh and laugh and laugh and enjoy watching them after 30 years for me. And Paige and Norm were my regulars, along with Timmy, who just called. So good to have you, talk to you again, you guys. What questions?
And we would incur the copyright laws too with the music every night too.
Yeah, you could play anything back then on the air without copyright problems. Now you can't.
But Paige, are you there with me? I hope you're there.
Of course.
Oh, there you are.
Yay!
Okay, there you are.
I don't like talking over other people.
So, well, I guess, well, Paige, I will allow you to go first with your question.
Oh,
please.
I get to be first. Okay,
yes.
Well, this is good because my question is related to what we were just talking about and watching the uploads. And Sharon, when you were filming these shows, some of the storylines after Jeff Brown, you probably went, ah, God, this is such dreck. But when you watched it again with all of us, did you get and appreciate more of an appreciation for it or for some of them or anything like that?
You know what? No doubt about it. No doubt about it. I, again, had not watched those shows for 30 years. And when you're in the middle of anything, really, you can't get the full perspective of the whole experience. And my best years on The Edge of Night were, unfortunately, the final years of The Edge of Night. And that energy, you know, when you're on the set knowing that an executioner was hovering around, it raised the stakes big time on the set, because previous to this, a soap could have one or two flop storylines, but the soap stories just go on and on and on and on and on, because we're talking about a 28-year run here, and it was radio before that. So even when the storylines dragged on for months and months, and that was old school to get everyone to tune in every day with those cliffhangers and everything, but then suddenly ABC and Gloria Monty coming along, and now stories are moving fast, and they only last 3 months tops, and they were changing the whole game. So we were kind of caught in the middle of that since we were on ABC, and we were very nervous at that time, because all of a sudden P&G was talking big budget cuts. We were losing stations for this reason or that reason. Our air times, as I said, were absolutely hilarious. They were supposed to be at 4 p.m., The Edge of Night, but sometimes they were 9, 10 a.m. and sometimes midnight. So our neck was like on the block then. And we all loved the show so much, and we wanted it to be as good as it could be. So when Henry got fired and Lee came on, it was a very perilous ride for us because he changed everything. And if you watch, you can see us all working really hard with all the changes, because we were definitely professionals. And as Lois Kibbe would always say, I just read them as they're written. I mean, we made whatever we got work, and we gave it life. And that's why I was so happy to revisit the show again after 30 years for just that. It wasn't a bad show that got canned. It was like politics. There was network and corporate things going on, and we had a really good show, and we all had a chance to shine on it, but it was really tense. So, you know, back then Larkin and I were thinking our characters were being ruined from what Henry, the way Henry had written us at the time, And yet looking back, I can see, I was able to see that our work was good. It was still good. And the characters were strong. And the ISIS building stuff was just a scream. It was outrageous, but you know what? It was also courageous. And it was just really good 80s soap. I also loved The Haunted House. Larkin and I just had so much fun with that. And our second wedding was really well done. Jennifer Taylor got some fantastic stuff. Chris Weatherhood was great. But the bombs also stand out as well when you look back. And the owl story, as we call it, obviously killed us. I wish we had been given more time, but you know the time was up. So in a way, it was very redemptive for me to go back and watch the ending. I kind of feel bad for Sheldon because he was not allowed one mistake. We were on the razor's edge, so to speak, then. You know, he had a mistake. He had a few mistakes. So, but yeah, it was great to go back and look because it was just good work and it was a good show to the end, as far as I'm concerned.
Terrific. Well, I don't know if I can top that, but I would like to know, because you spent 4 years with Larkin Molloy as your screen partner. Do you have any thoughts or comments about what that experience is like working between he and you? I know.
How much time
do we have, right?
Yeah.
Or a funny anecdote that might stand out.
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, I have to say it's really hard to believe that it was only 4 years because we felt like an old married couple. We had been through so much together in that time. You know, he came on the show, and he was being set up to just be another one of Raven's paramours, and they were going to kill him off within a year. And immediately we clicked, and it just blew everybody's mind, including the writer, Henry, and Nick, our producer. They're like, oh, my God, we can't kill this guy off. Look at them. The chemistry was immediate. I mean, it was like a spontaneous combustion. Because we both felt really free with each other. And both of us were well-trained actors who had done a lot of theater. And I think the big thing was that we could improvise together. And the other thing was that it was much deeper than just an actor-to-actor relationship. And on many levels, I actually credit that to us not jumping into a public personal relationship right away, which we easily could have because we absolutely adored each other and we respected each other. But we didn't want to ruin our working relationship with some, you know, stupid little relationship with the jealousies and the fights and, you know, relationship stuff, soap opera stuff. I mean, it was the 80s in New York, and it was brutal out there, you know? So Larkin was incredibly talented and incredibly brilliant. He had a genius IQ, and so we talked, and we discussed, and we laughed, and we cried together. We were best friends. And after his accident, it was a pivotal point in our personal relationship, in our work relationship, because I saw, for those that don't know, I mean, I think everybody probably does, that Larkin, a couple of years into our stories, got hit by a car in a hit-and-run driver in New York and suffered terrible, terrible injuries. And he was deeply wounded. He really was. He was a mess. And he came back to work really fast. And that saved his life in one way because he needed to work. But in another way, you know, medically and emotionally, I mean, he was thrown back into the water pretty quick, like after he almost drowned, because that accident devastated him physically. And he actually had issues with his legs until he died. And certainly psychologically. So, you know, he came back, and I'm going to tell you a story, which I don't think I've told anyone, maybe Norm and Paige, but Nick, the producer, sent us on a promo to Brownsville, Texas, together not too long after he came back for a big benefit auction because Nick just thought it would be good for us to get out and do something and good for Larkin. And he still had a hip-high cast on his leg. He was gaunt. He was really fragile in so many ways. And one night after one of our appearances, he totally broke down. And he just cried like a baby. And he kept saying, "Look at me. Look at me." And he opened up his shirt and I saw these like thick Frankenstein like scars from his neck to his navel, big thick scars with crosses on them. He had been completely sliced open and then sewn shut, and he, you know, I knew that it was just more than his him physically being able to come back and, like, you know, stand on a set and give lines. And I knew as a friend and someone who loved him that he needed me then. And so I started spending a lot more personal time with him than usual. And I just loved him and loved him and encouraged him as much as I could. I would bring food that I cooked over to his place. And I took him places, which wasn't easy because of his cast and everything else. And there was one story where I took him to a resort upstate New York. And it was the middle of winter. And they had a big pond that you could ice skate on. And I had actually been ice skating since I was a kid. So they had a wheelchair with these sleigh runners on it, and we got Larkin on that wheelchair, and I skated him all over the pond that night with music playing, and it was just absolutely magical. And eventually, you know, he recovered and he got his confidence back. And I have to say that the day that I saw him start to flirt again with the gorgeous extras on the set, I was so happy. I was like, yes, go, Larkin, get out there again. You know, you're beautiful. It's okay. And that was our relationship. That was just one aspect of it, and there were many, many aspects of it. And we saw each other through so many difficult personal times. But, you know, we saved up all our personal passion for each other, and we put it into our scenes. And you can see it. When you watch those shows again, it's so clear. You can just see us playing it all out in our just fantastic stories with those incredible, incredible characters, Sky and Raven. And it was like there was no holding back. It was all there. It was all real, and it was all from our heart. And that was our relationship, you know. Whew.
That's beautiful, that Sharon. Beautiful. Beautiful.
And,
well,
you know, the
we'll
nature
go.
Of chemistry. I just want to say the nature of chemistry, of chemistry on set, because it's a very strange and unique thing. I mean, you know, what makes that? What creates that kind of chemistry? What's the mystery? Because some people just can't translate that on, and some people you just have it. And, I mean, here's the thing. It's very similar to a regular relationship. You can be really great friends but have no physical attraction, or you can be attracted to physical beauty. But if you're an actor, if they can't act or the personality doesn't click with yours, that chemistry isn't going to be there. You know, or you can be attracted to their talent, but physically and personality-wise, they just don't do it. So it's not like a cut-and-dry thing. Just like life relationships aren't. Larkin was physically gorgeous, outrageously talented, and we were very close friends. We laughed our butts off every day. So, you know, bingo. And the biggest thing to me and to him, because he told me this so many times, was that we could improvise so easily together. We, like, took the words, and as we've talked about many times before in interviews, on soaps, you have 5 times to run through. You have a blocking, you have a camera blocking, you have a rehearsal, you have dress rehearsal, and then you tape. So there's no playing a scene on stage for weeks or months to, like, get inside it. You just have to learn your words, and then you kind of improvise on camera to make it come off real. So Larkin and I played with the content, and if the words didn't come out exactly as they were written in the context of the scene, whatever they came out, they were just many times better than what was even written. And I never heard anyone complain, not Lee or Sheldon, if we didn't get it exactly the way they wrote it, because it just came out of us and it was easy for us. And so we could save each other from so many flubs by doing that. because we would just take a scene and run with it. The scenes were spontaneous, and they were much better for that. And that's what I call chemistry. That, to me, is a really exciting thing, to just be able to riff live on camera, like you're doing, you know, a stand-up comedy act. You're live on camera, and we would have the lines, we would have the scene, we have the characters, and then we would just amuse each other and do our craft and adore each other and pretend fight and then get to kiss and kiss and kiss and kiss and then have a bed scene and then just play, but have it all come directly from our hearts, you know, and then we would go home. And then we would come back the next day and we would do it again. And then we would get paid for it. I mean, it was the perfect relationship, you know, no divorce, no nothing. So that was the chemistry between Larkin and I.
And that happens
and
very
so evident, yeah.
Yeah, it happens so rarely. I mean, you two had it in Gangbusters for sure. But well, anyway.
Wait.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
Sharon,
yes.
Sharon, you should talk about how Normie's upload reunited
yes.
you guys after so many years.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, because you saw storylines that you hadn't seen in so long, and you actually felt good about some of the material.
Well,
right?
So not only had I not watched The Edge of Night for 30 years, but Larkin and I's life just took off in totally different directions, and then I ended up moving to California and had three kids, and, you know, I mean, we both went on to do different shows, and we just had different lives, and we interestingly enough, just never even crossed paths after The Edge of Night closed. I never saw him or spoke to him or came across him from December 1984. How strange is that? So all of a sudden, you know, we decide to do these shows on my Edge of Night Facebook page, Sharon Rose Gabbett. We decided, like I think it was about 2015 or so, that we would start rerunning the last 4 years of The Edge of Night and watch it together and kind of do a Mystery Science Theater 3000 because it was 80 soaps after all. And
he loved Mystery Science Theater.
He loved it. It was one of his favorite shows. And although we loved that show, we could still laugh at, you know, and we took screen grabs and we would watch it together and make fun of it, but also love it together. And it wasn't long. By the end of that year, Larkin had joined us, as well as many other people like Chris Weatherhead and Jennifer Taylor and Alan Fawcett, and just a lot of people that were on joined us and put in their 2 cents, and it was just incredible. And Larkin loved it. He had so much fun watching it again. He had been through hell and high water physically, still from that accident. That accident, you know, it caused problems for him for the rest of his life. And then he and I started speaking on the phone and doing Skype together, and just cried. And it was like it's like Francis and Terry and I, even if we haven't seen each other for a long time because our lives get busy, when we see each other again, it's like we just spoke yesterday. And it was like that with Larkin. Even 30 years had gone by, and it was just like not a day had passed. And we cried and laughed and talked and watched the shows together, and it was amazing that we had that time. And he was supposed to. I was going to fly him to California to have a visit. But as we all know, unfortunately, he suddenly passed away right after his birthday in 2017, I think it was. Or was it 2016? Gosh. And, you know, so that was our – at least I knew he was so happy. He was in such a good mood. He felt so good again, revisiting those and remembering how much fun we had. And even some of our, the people on the crew and the staff joined in, our camera operators, and because we were all one big happy family. Didn't matter whether you were an actor or on the production staff or a camera operator or boom operator, we were family, and we all laughed together like family. So Larkin at least had that in his last year, and he and I got to reconnect and just, you know, remember, look, love doesn't die. It was just as strong and beautiful as it was in the 80s. So, yeah, it was very special.
Yeah. Yeah, he would send me messages and said, good show tonight, Norm, good show. So,
yep.
That was wonderful.
He loved it, totally loved it. And he appreciated it.
Well, in 20 words.
Yes.
Yeah. In 20 words or less, I just want to ask, what do you attribute is Edge of Night's lasting legacy, and why is it still beloved?
Wow.
I know it's hard.
Well, you know, it's not even 20 years or less. It's like, or 20 words or less. It's pretty clear The Edge of Night was not like any other soap. Everybody in the industry knew it. Everybody. Colleen Zenk, the star of As the World Turns and an impeccable actress who was on forever. And she told me after Larkin died, I spoke with a lot of people in the business, and she said, I was always so jealous of you. Hello? Why? Because I got to work on that show, and I had Larkin as my leading man. Now, there you go. That says something right there. But it wasn't just when Larkin and I were on. It was different from the very start in that it was created to be like a Perry Mason type show. Murder mysteries and trials. And Henry Slessor, who wrote it for, I don't know, what, 15 years or so, was a professional 60s type murder mystery novelist, you know, with all the intrigue and the cigarettes and a bar being and drinks being prominent in every scene, all that kind of stuff. The Whitney Mansion always had a bar right up in the front of the set, and it was used in almost every scene. And it had the personal intrigue, the clues, the lowlifes, the red herrings. Edge of Night had all of this. And it wasn't just about regular emotional soap stuff, although there was plenty of that too. But it revolved around a whodunit, and that made it very different. And it also had a different look to it. Like even after it went from black and white to color, it still had those shadowy dark sets with the film noir flavor to it. And it still had that in 1977 when I joined the show, and I absolutely loved it. And that kind of lighting absolutely loved my cheekbones. You know, it was like a 40s look, like Bogart, Bacall, Hepburn, and Cary Grant kind of stuff. So people who are into classic time capsule shows, which everyone is now, you know, shows that capture specific genres that you don't see anymore, are the ones that binge watch those kinds of things. And The Edge of Night captured film noir, murder mystery, glamour, the dark side of the tracks, soap opera. There was nothing like it. No matter how much of a bigger budget any other show had, or whether Elizabeth Taylor did a guest spot or not, you know, because we had Tony Award-winning actors on our show. I worked with Elaine Stritch and Holland Taylor, and we had tons of New York actors from regional theater. I mean, Larkin could fence. Hello, you know, he had done regional theater. He knew how to fence. And we had character actors from Central Casting that were just absolutely amazing, real New York character actors. So, you know, looking back at my career path, there's no doubt in my mind that playing Raven on The Edge of Night for 7 years during the 80s, which was the best decade of soap operas, the height of the soap opera genre, was the most fortunate and wonderful thing that ever happened to me. And, you know, both Larkin and I made a lot of money after it was canceled working on other shows, but both of us would admit that it was downhill creatively from 1984 on. And that's why people still watch that show in more than 20 words.
Well, you're the best. You got other fans that want to come on, I'm sure. So we're going to let you
love
go.
Love you too.
Paige and I are going to run.
Love you.
Love you.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, so let's see. Bobby, you're on the air.
Hey, I really enjoyed some of those great memories, even though I was a little too young for Ed tonight. Because other than Lori Loughlin, who was on there and later was on Full House and later Full House and the Hallmark Channel movies before the scandal with Felicity Huffman, Hoffman was in with their kids happened, I think I knew who she was just from that show, but I didn't watch it that much. I didn't watch it because I was just kind of too young for it, but I just know who Lori was from Full House as Aunt Becky and from the Hallmark Channel movies.
Yeah, this was Lori's first. I think this was The Edge of Night was Lori's like first big professional break. She was 16 years old when she started in The Edge of Night, and she was just a fantastic natural actress, and we all loved her.
Right, right. And it was great that she was paired with another great actor from the soaps, John Samuels, who came from General Hospital in the early 80s.
Yeah,
at that same time,
absolutely.
That Rick Springfield and Tony and Gene was being the big talk on the show and everything else at that time, especially with Rick's music career and with the Luke and Laura thing going on at that time. But unlike what we're seeing now with Lauren, with what we saw her and Felicity get into with their kids as far as being in the headlines for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
But it's just great to talk to somebody that really knew about the golden age of soaps, which was, of course, the 80s, because in the beginning, General Hospital was the thing back in the 80s, Love in the Afternoon. And then when Bold and Beautiful came on and Young and Restless started taking over that number one position, CBS dominated the soaps back then. And it seemed that because of the way we stream it and with what Carly said earlier with the OJ trial, the first Gulf War, 9/11, and this, that we see all these soaps just disappear all of a sudden. Luckily, thanks to the internet, it was able to just get some of the shows that are on there, but I don't think I want to pay $14 to watch Young and Restless or Bold and Beautiful.
Yeah.
Because I watch it on Pop, which is no longer on. And the same holds true with Days of Our Lives. I'm binge watch.
You know, this is what's really cool about, for me, looking back 30 years ago, because, first of all, thank heavens, USA Cable and AOL Online for a while rebooted The Edge of Night just the last 4 years, which, you know, I was on the last seven and the last four were my best years. So I was so fortunate that they put those shows back out again.
Right.
And so there was a whole nother generation of younger people that were like 9, 10 years old when The Edge first aired that could appreciate it, and better yet, they could tape it. Because the 80s, it cost $2,000 to buy a stupid tape machine to tape yourself. Right?
Yeah.
Betamaxes were like $2,000 or $1,000 to buy. So who did that, you know? So they saved all of this stuff, and now they're on YouTube, and thank heavens, or it all would have been lost because Procter & Gamble started wiping tapes. So, you know, stupid. So all that classic stuff was gone.
Yeah,
so thank
God
for streaming.
Yeah, because I know that USA Network also had some of the game shows that just recently got rebooted another that also on at the time, as well as some cartoons that night before Cartoon Network and Boomerang came out. And of course now
I Love Lucy. Even my kids watched I Love Lucy.
And it's a shame that soap had to end, because like I was saying during the whole impeachment thing to viewers that was missing out on General Hospital, it's where soap net when we need it. Why did Pop have to stop this soap? I mean, I don't mind watching reruns of the original Charm, but I can watch it on TNT anytime. And same
yeah.
holds true with 3 hours of classic Love Boat, because I know they tried to reboot it in the 90s when the UPN network, which is, I believe, now the CW, tried to bring it back and failed.
Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah, but it's just fortunate to talk to you, and hopefully I'm praying that Laurie will get back and get redeemed back after what happened to her, because it was a shame to hear what happened to her and Felicity because of their kids. Because I was just more shocked. I was like going, really? Aunt Becky is going to jail? And I was just ready to insert any Olsen twins, you're in big trouble, Mr. Jokes, right towards the newspaper. But I wasn't going to be that bad. Because what if her agent was in fetus? What if this leaked out and then TNC gets it? Then it's going to be point back to us, the fans.
Yeah. Well, I love Lori. We all loved Lori. And, you know, I don't know what to say about it. I really have no comment because, I wish the best
sad.
For her. Yeah.
But it was great to talk to you. And it was great to just hearing
Thank
from
you
your
for
friends
calling in.
And fans of catching up.
Yeah.
And I'm just glad
I've
been working on
your
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Hey, David, you're mail.
Karen, how you doing?
Hey, who am I talking to?
David.
David, you know, the one that books have been paying for me. My great PR
Sweet
person.
David.
Yeah. It's great hearing your story about Lachlan. I was moved by it. Really get here about your story about Glocken.
I love him so much.
Yeah. Well, another world, you play a deaf person. What was like playing deaf person on that another world?
Oh, yeah, on another world. You know, I have to say, The Edge of Night was certainly the best experience overall, but, you know, you do get better as an actress the more you do it, and I can't help but feel that some of that work on Another World was some of the best work I ever did.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it was good, just good dramatic acting, where I, you know, they had me, I had been traumatized in a boat accident where I lost my son, he died and drowned, and so the character couldn't speak or hear. And so she learned sign language, and then she was reunited with Caitlin, one of the big stars on the show. And so for the first, I don't know how long, 6 weeks maybe a couple of months, I had to learn sign language and use sign language to communicate. And I worked really, really hard at that. And as I look back on some of those scenes, I was very, very proud of my work on that show. Even though in general it was a rough experience for me to be on Another World for quite a few reasons. But yeah, that work was really good. I was very proud of that.
You were great on that show. You were great. I remember you playing on there.
Thank you.
Do you have any set of secrets that we should know about another world? I'm sorry, it's the night. Do you have any set of secrets that we should know about?
About anyone on another world?
No, I'm not. At the night, set of secrets.
Right. You know, I probably have a million of them, but I'm 68 years old now, and it was 30 years ago. And, like, my day now, my week, my big exciting week this week was I bought myself a new recliner.
Mm-hmm.
So I set up my new recliner, and, you know, and then I put a desk next to it so that I could put my computer and my phone and my papers and a pen and my lip gloss and chocolate. And that, you know, I mean, that's my life, like, you know, centering my world and around my little corner where I have my recliner and my, and a little bookshelf, you know, and I'm contemplating, should I move the wine refrigerator over there too and put some glasses, you know? So that's like my big secret and where my life is right now. But I just had like an incredible year last year where I moved. It was a really big move because I have a lot of heavy furniture, big antique stuff. I still have a lot of clothes from The Edge of Night and from New York. And,
there's
a lot of stuff. So it was a big move moving from Northern California to Southern California so that I can set my autistic daughter up and I can begin to have a little more freedom. And then my son got married last year too, so I had a wedding. And then I did a trip to Peru and Bolivia, where I went to Cusco, which is like 11,000 miles above sea level, and it went to archaeological sites all around Cusco. And then I went to Machu Picchu, and I climbed Huayna Picchu, which is a mountain right next to Machu Picchu. And that's at like up to 13,000 feet. And we climbed over 1,200 feet straight up. So I did that. And then we went to Lake Titicaca, and it was just an incredible trip. And then came back, and then it was holiday time. And then my twin granddaughters, who are 5 years old, came and visited me for a week. So it was just an incredible year last year, you know. And this is why I'm just, you know, fantasizing about a recliner right now, because this year I just want to sit back in that recliner and relax now. I think I'm going to write another book. I think I have a novel this time. I'm working on a novel, so that's what's on the agenda for me.
Please come back and tell us more about it.
Okay. When I get that book done, it's going to be called...
David, do you have any more questions?
Yeah, I want to I think I see you on Girl Hospital. I will see you on Girl Hospital. I think you'll be great on General Hospital.
Write to them.
I do a spot on General Hospital in a minute. I live close now to L.A.
Don't worry, Sharon. I'm on the case.
Tell them. Tell them to call me up. All right.
Yeah. Bye, bitch. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for calling in. And we.
My pleasure.
When you are done with the book, let David or me know, and we will get you back on.
Thank you, Carly. This was fun.
No problem. Have a great night.
It was a great night. Make sure you send me the link so I can post this on my Facebook page, okay?
Oh, I will. I totally will.
All right. Love you both.
It takes a couple of hours. Love you. I'll know if I will send it to you tonight.
Okie dokie. This was fun.
Okay. Have a great night.
Nighty night.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, boys.
Hey, guys.
Hey,
okay,
Bobby.
That was Sharon Rose Gobert. And I usually would go for sub time tonight, but you know what? We are coming back tomorrow night, right? Aren't we, David?
Yep, thank you, Curtis.
Carly, unfortunately, we'll probably be unable to do the show tomorrow because I'll be out on Valentine's Day. But
I know. We are less important than your girlfriend. We are not doing David.
That's not Carly, that's not true. And besides Carly, I'm not too sure if I'm gonna be doing a show next Friday night from Myrtle Beach as far as calling in.
Okay, you know what? I'm kidding. I'm gonna do it when you tell him I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sure if I would be able to call you next Friday night, even if I have got you Wally Kurt, you know, in an interview, because I don't know how to do the speakerphone that much, and it'd be hard for to us to have you talk to you and talk to Maggie and talk to David. But it would be hard to also track him down also because I don't want to literally get in trouble for stalking a celebrity in Myrtle Beach. That's because you definitely don't want to see me because this could be my last show.
Bobby,
I'm just joking, Carly. Just joking, Carly.
Well, I know. Have fun with your date tomorrow night. Don't do anything I want to do. Which makes the list really long. And we will see, David and I will see everyone tomorrow night with
Andy Curtis,
right?
Yeah.
Yep. And have a nice night, everyone.
Good night, guys.
Good night, Bobby.
Bye, night.
Have a
good night,
Bobby. Day, Carly.
Yep, I will. Bye.
Bye.